2 years ago was in the in a season of global pandemic, which is now in its third year, and it also reminded us, if we had seen it, that we live in an era of climate change. So a plague of locusts in a time of pandemic and in a time of climate change, there's layer upon layer upon layer going on. So we're not staring at a plague of locusts right now, certainly in New Zealand, but COVID is a particular locust-like threat. It's a virus outside our ability to control it. It mutates itself to suit its own purposes. It grows, it develops, and it spreads. So there's not a plague of locusts, but there is a viral plague, I guess, if you like. So that's our context. So let's have a look at Joel. Gosh, it's still only just past 20 to 11. That's good. We know absolutely nothing about Joel, so I can't give you a wonderful historical context, I can't give you a timeline, I can't give you a geographical region. We know nothing about him at all, except his name Joel means Yahweh is God. Not necessarily helpful for him, and yes, we do find out that his father, he had a father, and the father's name was Pethuel. But we don't know where or when he lived. So we can't put him in any context except he's in the Bible, so presumably he was a prophet to the people of Israel at some point in their history. All we can do then is listen to what he says, as he and the people he is writing to are facing a plague of locusts. So I thought we might read the first chapter together. Part of what we're doing, trying to get us as we gather together to try and share the load a little bit. So if five people could possibly just volunteer to come out and read a bit each, would be lovely. The great thing with reading a prophet is that with Joel, it's not a thus saith the Lord, so you've got to do it deeply seriously, but it needs to be spoken with authority. So we have four wonderful authoritative people. And John's going to come and be an authoritative man on the end. Gender is not important. So just so you know, I'm going to read the first bit, and then we can go down the line. Where do we begin? Who wants to take over and read the next one? Amy, do you want to start down here? Okay. So I'll do the first bit first. God's message to Joel, son of Pethuel. Attention, elder statesmen, listen closely, everyone, whoever and wherever you are. Have you ever heard of anything like this? Has anything like this ever happened before, ever? Make sure you tell your children, and your children tell their children, and their children their children. Don't let the message die out.
What the chewing locust left, the gobbling locust ate. What the gobbling locust left, the munching locust ate. What the munching locust left, the chomping locust ate.
Sober up, you drunks. Get in touch with reality and weep. Your supply of booze is cut off. You're on the wagon, like it or not. My country's being invaded by an army, invincible, past numbering. Teeth like those of a lion, fangs like those of a tiger. It has ruined my vineyards, stripped my orchards, and clear-cut the country. The landscape's a moonscape.
Weep like a young virgin dressed in black, mourning the loss of her fiancé. Without grain and grapes, worship has been brought to a standstill in the sanctuary of God. The priests are at a loss. God's ministers don't know what to do. The fields are sterile. The very ground grieves. The wheat fields are lifeless. Vineyards dried up. Olive oil gone.
Dirt farmers, despair. Grape growers, wring your hands. Lament the loss of wheat and barley. All crops have failed. Vineyards dried up, fig trees withered, pomegranates, date palms and apple trees, dead wood everywhere, and joy is dried up and withered in the heart of the people.
And also, you priests, put on your robes and join the outcry. You who lead people in worship, lead them in lament. Spend the night dressed in gunny sacks. You servants of my God, nothing's going on in the place of worship. No offerings, no prayers, nothing. Declare a holy fast. Call a special meeting. Get the leaders together. Round up everyone in the country. Get them into God's sanctuary for serious prayer to God.
Thanks, team. Got a great group of prophets here, haven't we? So thanks a lot. Do you want to sit down? Thanks. So what's going on here? We've got a plague of locusts, and it's described really dramatically, isn't it? And very graphically, too. Everything that's lost, it's destroyed the fields, it's destroyed the crops, the orchards and the vineyards. Everything has withered and dried up. There's dead wood everywhere. And as a result, we hear joy has dried up and withered in the hearts of the people. Everyone's at a loss. No one knows what to do. Even the priests and ministers don't know what to do. There's no grain for bread and no grapes for wine, and so suddenly temple worship has been brought to a standstill. You get the feeling that for people here, life has somehow come to an end. In our world today, at least people know that there are some things you can do when a plague of locusts comes. Pesticides, insecticide sprays, and so on can help to some extent. So today we wouldn't be totally at a loss. May not deal totally with the problem, but we can make a start. But back then in Joel's time, and for much of the history of the planet, there have been no pesticide sprays available, so nothing that anyone could do in the time of a locust plague. But change the context from locusts to a global pandemic, and we see once again that in a real way, everyone is at a loss. No one really knows what to do. We're back to floundering around trying to find solutions to manage the problems and to try and eradicate the problem. But we are having to be stretched in our thinking and our imaginations and our explorations. So I guess for people in Joel's time, and possibly even for us today, there are inevitable questions that come into our minds. What's going on? What's the cause? What hope is there? What can we do about it? A lot of what questions, which give way to some why questions, I guess, especially for Joel's compatriots. Why has God allowed this? Why is God punishing us? Why isn't God on our side anymore? Well, how does Joel answer it? The next little bit is part of his answer. He says, what a day, doomsday. God's judgment day has come. The strong God has arrived. This is serious business. Food is just a memory at our tables, as are joy and singing from God's sanctuary. The seeds in the field are dead, barns deserted, grain silos abandoned. Who needs them? The crops have failed. The farm animals groan. Oh, how they groan. The cattle mill around. There's nothing for them to eat. Not even the sheep find anything. Calamity has happened. What's caused it? Is God behind it, or is it that God has merely allowed it? All these deep theological questions. Or is this a natural occurrence which would have happened anyway in the cycles of the natural world? And if it's that, is God absent, or is God still with us in all that's happening? Locusts are flying around for Joel. Questions are flying around as well. So what is Joel trying to say here? He certainly doesn't seem to be trying to answer any of those questions in this first chapter anyway. But he does seem to suggest that even in times of major disruption, like he's describing, there is a way to begin to get our heads around it. And in so doing, there is a hint, just a hint, a glimpse maybe, that grace is to be found in there. There were some pointers. First up, a word that we're familiar with at Ilam, the word lament. Lament the loss of wheat and barley. You who lead people in worship, lead them in lament. So as we know, lament is always a good starting point because it draws us to God, to God's perspective. We may have many questions. We may too be so overwhelmed by all that's happened that we don't even know what questions to ask. But if our starting point is with God, we might begin to find ourselves stepping back from everything that is crowding in on us, all the questions teeming through our brains, and start to see what is going on and feels overwhelming in the light of a bigger picture. And this is what Joel is trying to do, is to get the people to come back to the point at which enlightenment can begin to come. This is the place to begin. And so he goes on to direct those who lead God's people. Declare a holy fast. Call a special meeting. Get the leaders together. Round up everyone in the country. Get them into God's sanctuary for serious prayer to God. Is this doomsday? Is this God's judgment day? Is this the day of the Lord? All those questions that are sitting behind what Joel is saying. It may be tempting to think so. But lament, fasting, prayer, disciplines which draw us to God may mean that we see things differently. It's tempting in our day, in the face of disasters, to turn to the book of Revelation and read the signs of the coming of the end times, isn't it? And that's where we look to, some people look to interpret what we're facing as being something predicted long ago, indicating that Christ is about to return. And so that's, for a lot of people, the starting point to find solutions. We've seen that happening with COVID and with just about every natural disaster over the last couple of hundred years. But Joel doesn't have the benefit of the book of Revelation or any of the other apocalyptic literature in our Bibles. To him, the way to deal with this is far more straightforward, and the way that I think even the book of Revelation is pointing us to turn to God and lay everything out before God. Whether or not easy answers are to be found, we start by pouring out our hearts on the way to quietening ourselves to allow God to speak. And if we just turn back into Joel chapter 1, the very last part of the chapter, which we haven't read yet, says this. It says, Joel's voice coming into the mix. God, I pray, I cry out to you. The fields are burning up. The country is a dust bowl. Forest and prairie fires rage unchecked. Wild animals dying of thirst look to you for a drink. Springs and streams are dried up. The whole country is burning up. The beginning of lament, laying it all out there before God, telling God, this is how it is. Do you not see it, God? This is what we are facing. God, I pray, I cry out to you. Believe it or not, we're now more than 2 years into this pandemic. We haven't so far seen our food supplies destroyed, but we have seen major disruptions in our way of life, disruption to everything that we take for granted. We've been forced to re-examine our priorities, what's important to us. We've probably suffered some inconvenience. We haven't, hopefully, suffered anything truly terrifying, at least not here in remote, secure New Zealand for now. The pandemic, though, is clearly not a temporary problem, although it has provided us with lots of temporary problems along the way. It's taken away normal and provided us with a thing called the new normal, that life is uncertain. The only thing that is certain is uncertainty, we're told. That the way we can do something today may not be the way we can do it tomorrow. We can't make assumptions. All planning has to be undertaken lightly. We can't see or predict an end of all this will come, nor can we even begin to know what the end will look like. Where is there grace for us in this season? I was reading this week a piece by American author Ruth Moon Mari entitled Move Over Daily Rhythms, Disruption is the New Routine. For her, though, disruption came because she had the birth of a long-wanted first child. But the child came 3 weeks earlier than expected, before she was prepared, before she'd got the house ready, before she'd had time to finish off the manuscript she was writing and get it to the publishers, before she'd cleared out her office and made way for the nursery. And she was writing about the disruption that came into her life with the birth of this child. She said about the arrival of her baby, I have waited and hoped for these things and am eager for their arrival, but they're also inconvenient. They don't arrive on my schedule and are constant reminders that I have no control. But in the pausing and acknowledging of this, she finds grace. But even in the disruption of life, grace is to be found. And that's what warmed me to what she was writing and helped me when I was thinking a little bit about disruptions. Her disruption was very personal. Our disruption is something that we're all experiencing. But she quotes from writer and theologian Frederick Buchner's book, Wishful Thinking, where he says this: grace is something you can never get, but can only be given. There's no way to earn it or deserve it or bring it about. The grace of God means something like, here is the world, beautiful and terrible things will happen. Don't be afraid, I am with you. I like that. Here is the world, beautiful and terrible things will happen. Don't be afraid, I am with you. We reminded ourselves at the start of the service from Ephesians 2 that God loves us deeply. He's full of mercy. He gave us new life because of what Christ has done. He gave us life even when we were dead in sin. God's grace has saved you, Paul reminded us. It's by grace we have been brought into God's community through God's grace, the free gift of God. And what Ruth Moon Mari and Frederick Buchner are both saying is that grace is to be found even in lives that is disrupted, where chaos reigns. Things may not work out according to our expectations or timelines, but grace is there in the discovery that God is with us in it all. And I think that's what's underlying Joel chapter 1. Joel is drawing the people of his time to refocus in on God, opening the way, in effect, for grace to be found. Grace may be in perspective and understanding, but grace too in finding that God is with them. We'll see next week how that unfolds a little bit more. For us, though, the pandemic certainly doesn't honor our expectations of normality, does it? Or our timelines for what we want to achieve. And this time of the year, we normally have a service planner in place. We've got speakers booked in. We've got everything sorted for the whole year. But once again, we have everything in disarray, and we hold planning really lightly. So we can't have expectations of what normality might be like or what timelines we want to achieve. The community we call church may look different when COVID-19 finally ends, whenever or however that may come about. But does this time maybe call us to lean much more into trusting God and so finding grace in God's presence and nearness in the interruption and disruption of our lives? In other words, is this a season when we're being called or encouraged, whatever you prefer, to be much more willing to pause and be open to God? Certainly for the people in Joel's time, in the face of this disastrous plague, that's what Joel was inviting them to do. To be willing to pause, to be open to God, and to place God at the center of their lives. For them, it was much more focused around the routines of worship that were part of the culture. I wonder how it might be for us today to do this, to pause and bring God back into the center of our lives. How might we do this at the start of a new COVID year? You may have some thoughts or ideas. I guess it's going to be a little bit different for each of us, whether it's engaging in or re-engaging in some spiritual disciplines that we have wanted to engage with or we've thought about or we have enjoyed in the past but have put on one side. Maybe it's just taking time each day for a moment to remember, God, you are with me. Maybe it's talking with others, getting together with others in a group, sharing a meal together and encouraging each other as we think about what God has been showing us, sharing the highs and the lows of life. Maybe it's just getting on the phone and calling somebody who you haven't been in touch with for a long time and just remembering that in the past you have shared a lot and that God has been part of your journey together. So many different ways we might find to pause and be open to God. I'm sorry to say that it's not still 20 to 11, so we haven't really got time to draw this into conversation, which we would probably have done, I guess, if we'd been in a small group home environment. But let's just pause for a moment and, in the quietness of our hearts, think, is there something, God, that maybe you are inviting me to do, to pick up, or to re-pick up, that would help me today and in the weeks ahead with whatever the government announcement is going to be and whatever crazy stuff is going to be happening in the next few weeks? Is there something, God, that you are calling me or inviting me or encouraging me to do that would help me today and us today as a community to be open to you and to all that you have for us? Our lives are disrupted, God. The future is always uncertain, but feels more uncertain at the moment. And so we look to you to lead us, to enlighten us, to be with us, and to help us. Amen. So, it's probably time we finished our service, isn't it? We have gathered, we have welcomed, we have worshipped, we have prayed, we have shared community together, we have shared a bit of the prophet of the year together as our topic for today. We need to bless each other as we close, and there's no rush. Feel free to stay and continue to share together in community. But how about we stand and finish our service as usual around the benediction? And let's look at each other